for July 15th.
And I called him and said it's a gin box. Right, yes, for 2 weeks before. And looking back, I can see, Mr. President, you gave me some pretty broad hints. You told me that it'd be necessary to take some steps just to the mainland, which would not make our friends on Taiwan too happy. It presents certain difficulties, but a lot of pluses, too. My job was to try to reconcile them, keep up their confidence and morale, and I had a lot to work with. There'd be no change in our essential policy to a Taiwan. Mutual defense treaty would be maintained, so I'd have something to work with. So, with the benefit of hindsight, I can say you gave me some pretty broad hints there, although, of course, my assumption then was that you had in mind for the relaxation rate, trade and travel.
Sure, of course. Well, the situation now, of course, is complicated with the Japanese, which we're quite aware have some influence on, but not control. And
they're showing great concern.
Well, they're working on it. They're working on the Japanese, I know.
Yes. But I believe they realize that they're not going to be able to change Japanese policy at this juncture. Tonight they're certainly going right on to Peking.
Sure it is.
This month, and probably will
the Japanese
button up the...
they want the best of both worlds. The Japanese want to return to the economic.
Yes, I have it both ways.
Role, and that would be, I think,
convalescing from this pretty serious bronchial involvement he has. He did have, but he's still very weak, and the doctors think it'll take several more weeks for him to fully recover. And of course, he might well be weaker than he was even after the full clinical
disease. It's fantastic.
It's amazing.
His brain is still.
He may have slowed up a little mentally, but not very much. And he is weaker physically. He doesn't go out as much. Even before this illness, he'd slowed down. He wasn't seeing as many people. Not even as much of his close Chinese associates as he did. He definitely is showing some of the ravages of advanced age. He can't get around it, but still phenomenal. I don't think he has any chronic illness, no sign of cancer or heart disease, anything like that. Just this acute bronchial infection, which I believe the doctors are getting under control, but it has been pretty severe. And he's underweight because he's not so very tall, but he's 103 pounds.
Oh, geez.
So he's practically just a race.
He should be
5 feet 6 or 7. I guess that's about his height. He needs to weigh quite a bit more than that.
Quite a remarkable group of men. And there, and how long they lasted. There was Churchill, and of course Eisenhower, and De Gaulle, and Adenauer, and Kyoshi.
Yeah.
I mean, who of course was afterwards. But all of these men I've seen, and they were very old. And Churchill had a stroke. There was nothing wrong with his brain.
Yes, even after that.
No, no, but he was sharp. I mean, he knew what was going on.
Yeah.
And then the others were just men. Adenauer, De Gaulle were good to the last.
Yeah.
Eisenhower. Good to the last. Sure. And here this fellow is just amazing.
Yeah, I guess he's proving to be the most durable of all, isn't he?
Outlasting them all, 85 years of age.
Yeah, for sure. Phenomenal. And Madame Chung, in her own way, is just as phenomenal.
Oh, she's
about 15 years younger than he is. But to have even real physical charm as she has at the age of 70 is something. I'd say she's just as lovely, just as engaging and charming as she was the last time you saw her.
Such a damn
67.
Damn crime that they can't be the ones in power.
Yeah, the sham, that's right.
The way that history had to turn on them. You think of that period in the World War.
Yeah.
When when they were sitting in the great councils, you could see how mosquito them too.
Yeah, yeah.
Here they are sitting on Taiwan. Well, Taiwan of course is more than three-fourths of the miserable countries that make up the UN, but on the other hand, they know what they are and what they could be.
Yeah.
God, they must burn their tails.
Yeah.
It's just too bad. Too bad, that... well, we can... I think you've just got to give them the usual reassurances that that we're part... that it's a tough battle. I mean, they wonder perhaps why we can't just say to the Japanese, do this or that, you try it.
It just doesn't work.
We worked on it. We worked on it.
They know that.
Kissinger worked on it. The ambassador, we got a regular ambassador. But Tanaka is a new breed. He's not the old. I mean, this would never happen to Kishi or Saka. Tanaka is a little terrier. He's strutting around. And he's not. That's what you have here, you see.
I wonder if he has any awareness of sense the geopolitical importance of Taiwan just as a place to Japan, athwart their main sea routes to the Middle East and Europe, and then the doorstep of Okinawa, just the reversion of Okinawa is even more important.
He doesn't think much in those terms. He's more. He thinks only in the trade terms. He's just thinking really in terms of, frankly, of establishing relations with the mainland. Getting trade with them and keeping the trade with Taiwan. And the other thing, he sort of the goal of the United States to take care of that.
The Japanese did have a pretty sentimental feeling about Taiwan.
He admits a lot of stuff.
He's got feeling toward the
Philippines.
After all that, 50 years of administration there.
Yeah, sure, they ran the place.
Yeah.
But and they still do. There's still a lot of. You see, also, you've still got the old guard in the Liberal Party, like it's the Kishi group, that are
very close.
Very close.
the eve of the election of Tanaka, but nothing he could do to stop it, and nothing he could tell the ROC to change the policy, of course. As you say, it's a new age in Japan, certainly. Well, I think on the whole, the people there, both the mainlanders and the Taiwanese, have reconciled themselves to our policy. It's not that they like it, of course they don't like it, I'm happy about it. They think that we made a mistake, that it's going to boomerang on us someday, but they accept our good faith and our goodwill. They know that you were trying to do the right thing. And I believe they're convinced that already your policy has resulted in lowering the tensions in the area. It's quite evident that the Chinese communists are thinking even less in terms of a military confrontation across the Taiwan Strait than they were before. Well, and absolutely, this is a very tangible benefit. They've got a chance of limiting the contest with the mainland to peaceful and economic grounds, with no real threat, probably, of armed attack.
We can find a formula for that. We'd be geniuses.
Yeah, yeah.
The other thing that's done, which the JMO has a work, who really thinks in world terms, is that it has very significantly changed the world balance of power.
Yeah.
It's had one hell of an effect on the Russians.
Yeah.
He may see it differently than others, but that's an enormous effect.
Yes, so Jimbo understands that. He still has this profound distrust of the Russians. He's always
here. Right, so I distrust him too.
Yeah. So this is a plus with him.
You do.
So I think, in effect, they're reconciled to our policy. And they're very appreciated with the fact that we have not gone anything like as far as the Japanese and other friends, former friends of theirs have gone. They do look to us in a lot of ways to help them out, keep them, for instance, in the international financial institutions.
I think in the fund, all of us, I got right. Directly with Tanaka. I'm going to take a strong position on that.
And I presume the Japanese, well, both brothers, they'll vote right in case it comes to a vote in the World Bank.
What do you want? Will it?
I think they will, sir. But
I think they will. I don't. I think it depends on how strong the Chinese put it to them.
Yeah.
They certainly indicate they're going to vote right now.
Uh-huh.
But you know, he hasn't been there yet. I don't know what Joe Lai is going to say to him.
But,
at least that's what I hope.
Yeah.
And we'll put in, and when he gets back, we'll see that. You see, if they want to play this economic game, we can have a goal for them.
I'd be worried if there were actually total international isolation of the ROC except for us.
Yes.
They need more than that, of course. And if they are thrown out of the bank and the fund, an Asian Development Bank, and with country after country severing relations with them, if Labour wins in Australia, I think the next day the Australians break with the ROC and establish relations with the mainland.
Like
most of the Latin American countries are moving. Argentina has already broken with them.
Yeah.
And there are rumors that Venezuela might be weakening. Brazil is firing so far. I would say
Brazil is moving. Yeah. Moving
down
bombs.
Yeah, that's.
Thank God they're the best country in the whole damn place.
Yeah. Thailand seems to be wavering a little. Joe and I went all out to roll out the red carpet for their ping pong team recently that went to Peking. So we're seeing the diplomatic corps there just shrink month by month, and it's difficult for them to get in any international conference now. You know, we even have a problem with our endangered species conference, our own conference right here in Washington. We wanted them there, we invited them, but it turned out that most of the critical countries, including the African countries, the home of most of these endangered species, wouldn't even come if the Republic of China showed up. That's the dilemma we're up against. One way or another, I think we've got to try to prevent that total isolation.
Right.
But they're showing a lot of heart. They wouldn't give up even if they are totally isolated, except for us. They still try to make a go out of it.
Someone like Israel.
In a lot of ways, they are. They're showing the
strong,
same indomitable spirit.
Going to fight.
Their exports for the first 6 months of this year are up 38% over the the same period of last year.
Come on, that's
78%.
Plus last year's record was very good. That's just great.
They're showing great resourcefulness in finding ways of increasing trade, even with countries that are broken for them. Canada is one example. Canada was one of the first to break, you know, in this way back in the southern 1970s. They've increased their trade substantially with Canada. And their trade with Western Europe is going up, even though Belgium broke with them.
Yep.
Holland turned it back. Italy, of course, broke with them. West Germany apparently is on the verge of recognizing Peking. Before, they had, West Germany had no relations with either China, but I think they're going to turn to Peking. Their trade is up there, too. So they're showing this great resourcefulness in keeping up their trade. They're working as hard as ever. And they seem to have found the answer to continued economic development on a major scale without inflation. I've told them once or twice, half in jest, that I wish they could teach us something about that. Of course, the secret, though, is that they've got a disciplined labor force that doesn't strike and works like fury. Gradually, their benefits are increasing, but not head over heels. It's on a very controlled basis. And prices are kept down, so labor is not so restive about the cost of living, and more content with wages that are going up only very slowly. It takes, I guess, in a sense, a sort of semi-authoritarian a society to put that over.
Yeah.
It just couldn't be done here the way they do it. They outlaw strikes, for instance. But it works for them. Chan Cheng-Po, I think, is doing very well as premier.
He's going to be a successor.
Oh, of course, he'll be the successor, yes.
Yeah.
Although Vice President C.K. Yen, of course, is still the nominal number two. He's again vice president, another six-year term from May. And he would be the titular head of the government if anything happened to the GMO during the present six-year term. But even during that period, although he'd be the front man, would have some real power and status, too, because he's a very considerable man in his own right, as you know, a man of real stature. But he doesn't have this any particular charisma. He's just the bureaucrat, the super able bureaucrat, you might say,
yeah.
And a genius on development and economy and fiscal matters. So he still have a real substantive role and the titular role too. He'd be the front man. But Chan Cheng-Po has all the reins of power. He would be running things, but in close concert with C.K. Yen, they'd get along very well. So I think there'd be continuity and stability if President Chiang's time should come soon. I don't anticipate that it will, but of course you can never tell, particularly
at
that age. And there's a great feeling of warmth for you as the chief of our state and personally. You and Mr. Nixon, President and Ms. Chung, last time I saw him, which was some months ago. I've been in this country since late July, but they reiterated in warmest terms a high regard for you and wanted their very best good wishes and affection.
Well, our thoughts and tragedy is we have to be here when these historical forces work against them. If there were a way to do it otherwise, it would be done. But there isn't now.
Exactly.
You can see where we are.
Exactly. Yeah.
And because, from a personal standpoint, they're among the great people in the world. There's no question. Just no question.
Yeah.
And they've been personal friends of such long standing.
Well, I'm deeply convinced myself that the time had come for this. You did the right thing. It's one of the great creative master strokes. Diplomacy of this age, and I've told them that I believe in it. They know I'm a good friend of theirs.
Oh, absolutely.
I don't say that I've got necessarily that sort of influence, but the others have told them that too. Others of their old friends, people like General Wedemeyer and Admiral Radford.
They still come there.
Yes, they well, General Wedemeyer, well, they haven't been out so recently, but Admiral Radford expects to come out. Somebody told me the other day that he's going to stop off there. He's going to the Philippines.
Great,
definitely. Come by there. He certainly is. And I've told them, too, Mr. President, that another bonus for them of your policy is that it has really stifled domestic criticism. sound policy.
Sure.
They just hadn't been.
They were becoming the issue.
They were. They were looked at as a stumbling block before to the necessary improvement of relations with the mainland. Well, it's no longer that way, so nobody much is criticizing our policy toward the ROC. None of our own people are. I told them this is a tremendous plus. Even the New York Times is.
That's why it's me.
New York Times has tapered off on criticism. Washington Post, even.
comfort in that, but nevertheless, that's something at least.
And I believe they see that. And my good access to them, the warmth of which I've received, just the close personal empathy is unchanged, that says, for following all this.
Well, we are, you can say.
I take no credit for that. It's the way you played it, Mr.
Well, I know, but it's I know it's hard for them. They must be. It's a bitter pill, because they know that how I feel about both them personally and their philosophy of governments compared to them. But we had to do this for very basic national security reasons. And if you can just continue to reassure them, that's a tough post. That's what you have to
yes.
do.
Well, I still love it there. I've been over there a long time, as you know, Mr. President.
How many years?
Which is way beyond the average for an ambassador to stay at one post. But if you want me there a while longer, I'm certainly willing to stay a while longer.
Yeah. You can plan to stay a while longer. Because it could change anything now there with them. That's awfully hard to get away with anybody else. You're one of the few people in the Foreign Service they trust. With good reason.
Well, I find it very congenial.
Yeah.
But they know that I haven't gone native there. But it goes without saying. It's my own country, first, last, and always. But they know, too, that I feel that their interests coincide so closely with our interests in many respects. They stand so many of the things that we do. It seems to me, Mr. President, that while, of course, we can't say that we think they ought to continue to follow a separate course, the truth is that our national interests really requires that they follow a separate course, which is the determination of all our mainlanders and Taiwanese alike. I think it's just destiny that they were intended to follow a separate course, separate from the mainland. When you look at the history, they haven't really been closely identified with the mainland since 1895, when the Japanese moved in there. Of course, there were 2 or 3 years, 45 to 49, when they were under the nationalist government, when it was still in Nanking. But even then, it was so confused in the immediate post-war period, it was a very light hand from Nanking, from the Chimo's government then in Nanking on Taiwan. It was a very confused, disordered period. But except that little interregnum, you might say, of 4 years, they've had no connection with the mainland since 1895. They've gone their own way for more than 50 years, almost 75 years. And the Taiwanese, of course, their ancestors mostly came over in the 17th century, 300 years ago. And they've developed a different way, though ethnically, of course, they're South Chinese. And there's 100 miles of blue water there. And if they want to go their own way, certainly it seems to me we ought to do everything in our power to assure that they will. The Shanghai Communique says that we won't intervene, and they understand that. But if they of their own free will and accord want to go their own way, and if force is not employed by the mainland, well, I believe they can do it. They are going to have to solve this problem of attempted isolation. I think eventually the Chinese communists will try economic isolation to put pressure on countries that want to make time for them to discriminate at least against the trade of Taiwan. And this will have to be overcome some way. They've got to keep up the economic prosperity or things will fall apart there. And it'll be a good seedbed for subversion, right, infiltration by the communists, who then might be able to take over peacefully, semi-peacefully. But I just hope that won't happen. I hope that in time the Chinese communists, as maybe these moderating influences come more into play, will see to it that people who've gone their own way for so long and are geographically detached too, are entitled to have their own orbit, separate orbit. want to. When you look at it, almost every island community in the world, roughly geographically corresponding to Taiwan, has gone its own way. Ceylon is an example.
Cyprus,
Madagascar, Malta. In their own case, if the Puerto Ricans had wanted to go their own way, they certainly could have. So it seems to me that that all the precedents are in favor of letting them go their own way if that's what they want. I'm convinced that they all want this with a passion, no question about it. And they're absolutely not negotiating with the mainland. They say this over and over, and they don't say it just for the record, too. They say it with the deepest of conviction. And it infuriates them when these rumors get out that secret negotiations already going on. There's just nothing to it. No responsible person in the government is negotiating with Peking. They're not going to negotiate. And of course, I'm taking a hands-on position. I'm not sure. Of course, I don't encourage him not to negotiate, but I don't encourage him to do it either. Just completely hands-off. But they understand that they mustn't stir up any sort of military excitement. They're not going to do it. We've got them. Of course, even with the treaty, we've got the exchange of letters by which they commit themselves not to take any offensive action against the mainland without our advance knowledge and concurrence. But there have been some little pinprick raids occasionally, just a little boat or something like that landing a triangle in on the mainland to pick up a few people that they could maybe get some information from, or just a little show of interest. But they stopped that since 1969. Absolutely nothing. Time of your visit, they gave me the most categorical assurances that be absolutely nothing. They even pulled back their normal patrols at the time of your February visit. And happened since that, too, they've told us they understand there mustn't be any sort of flare-up of any sort. And they will use utmost care to prevent any sort of a military tension, even with the Chinese communists. So that we don't need to worry about their rocking the boat.
Well, Leo, we wish you well.
Thank you.
They're great people. They're great people. I wish that things could work out better for them than they have, but just hang on.
I appreciate that. And I believe they'll make it. And Mr. President, I'm
going to make the economy.
That's right. And that's the crux of the matter, I believe. I'm going back to my ship. I miss you. Vito, the idea. President Wilson, I'm afraid it'll be one of the last voyages.
President Wilson.
She prizes, really cherishes that conviction on your part, President.